This is the DJ Spider Podcast, presented by BeatSource.
All right, we are here. It is the DJ Spider Podcast, presented by BeatSource. We're here live and direct, Beverly Hills, and we got Seattle in LA right now. We got a Seattle OG dope DJ, someone that has been in the hip hop game and the DJ game for an extremely long time. They've seen the evolution of this, probably a lot of ups and downs and many different people coming and going, from being a dancer in B-boy groups and B-boy crews to being in Sir Mix-a-Lot videos and owning an amazing underground hip hop label, putting Seattle on the map for hip hop in that direction, and working with legends like Jake One and other incredible, you know, rappers that you may or may not have heard of, Cutfather, and, you know, that legendary voice and people like that. And having an unreal, insane vinyl collection that we'll get into. A lot of people from the internet were asking hilarious questions about that. And to working with brands and having your own nightclub and still killing it and just showing the longevity of a DJ and, you know, someone that's into amazing music. So please welcome to the show, Supreme LaRock.
Thank you.
Let's go. That's right. Yo, so good to see you. Thank you for coming here.
I'm finally here.
Yes, I'm so glad you're here. And you're here with a bag of records under the table. So that's one of the first. You know, we're here talking about BeatSource, the streaming, but also you can't forget why we're here, how this all happened, and how we're all, you know, DJs and have a career, and it comes from these vinyl records, which you are a purveyor of and you know, an expert in that field. So I'm excited to get into all that. How you feeling today?
I'm great, man. It's sunny out. Like, I'm
good. Is. I know. It is. It is probably a little different than Seattle.
Yes.
We got the sun going on. It has been Seattle-ish here lately. Some rain, and it's coming this weekend. But glad to welcome you to the sun. And I know you're DJing tonight with some dope people here in L.A.
Trauma.
Dave Chappelle's DJ, right?
Yeah. Bang Jackson.
Bang Jackson. And
Aisha.
All right. Dope. Well, hopefully I can come by. Most likely I'm on soccer dad life or something, and
I'm not mad at
cooking
that.
Dinner, but
I get it.
I'll try. You know, can't lie though. But no, I'm so glad you're here and so glad to get into everything about your career and people that do know about you and people that don't know about you. It'd be cool to learn and just, I think, really educate people in one sense on how to be a DJ for a long time. You know, I feel like both me and you have been doing this for a long time. We discussed earlier, like, I used to come to Seattle and DJ a lot, probably over 15 years ago. Maybe
yeah,
even
it was about 15 years ago. 15, I was thinking about that earlier.
15 to 18 years ago.
It's been
ago.
A minute.
Yeah, like, wow, I mean, it's was on some 19 year ago type time.
I know. Time's flying.
Yeah, so, and you and shout to DJ Scene would, you know, we would always hang, or you would run over and come see me at my gig.
Yeah, so the funny thing, I feel like every time you were across the, literally across the street from where we were playing.
Yeah, what were the names of the clubs again?
It was Tabella, and I think it was Medusa.
Okay, yes, that's what it was.
No,
that one street,
and
it would get crazy at night when the street let out. I remember that. Those were some of my first Seattle experiences, too. I mean, I remember I got picked up by MySpace to DJ, and they're like, we got this guy DJ Scene. He's the MySpace DJ. And I was like, I know him through the underground hip hop world and us both doing scratches on people's records and having groups and DJing for rappers. And they were like, we're going to bring you up and you're going to play at the Showbox Theater, which was a massive spot. I mean, especially
it
for
is.
Me, like,
no, it's a big spot.
Very intimidating. I don't think I had done many places like that, if any. And they said, you're going to do a 4 turntable set with this guy, DJ Scene, who I knew who he was. I knew how dope he was, but it's hard to collaborate with someone in that sense, you know, and I'm coming from the vinyl days of like doing it with Steve Wonder and planning out whole sets. So to just jump on with him, I was like, holy shit, this is going to be hard, but turned out to be a dope night. And
yeah, as long as you communicate with each other, you can get through it.
Right. I feel like if you communicate Well, they did have us far away. I remember being like, I can't hear.
So that could be tough.
We were on that long ass stage. So it was definitely like, we're giving each other looks. You're doing hand signs that don't mean anything. You're hoping that telepathically you're speaking through beats. You know what I mean? You're like, he should know that this is the beat from this or this, you know, but of course, I mean, it worked out. I don't remember too many of our mixes, but, we both remained MySpace DJs for a while after that. We grew our top eight or whatever we did.
Yeah, I was super excited when I became a MySpace DJ.
Yeah.
I felt like I made it at that point, right?
Yeah, you were doing that too, right? It was, I mean, we were all like, you know, shout to Ted Skillett and Matty O and Tom, Big Tom, MySpace Tom. But yeah, they would support DJs at the time, fly us around, do different gigs.
So I have to thank Scene and shout out Scene because we went to lunch one day and I didn't like MySpace. And he's like, no, you have to get on there. Like,
right.
He made me basically get on there. And then I feel like once I did, that's really when I became traveling as a DJ and people would see me on there.
Interesting.
I started getting a lot of work that way.
So like the power of the internet, I mean, it's got its pros and cons, like we discussed earlier, you know, people fight about stupid things and somewhat two-dimensional where you can't get into a deep conversation, but it can expose you to people that could be fans of you, people that you are like-minded, you know, around the world.
Right. You find your tribe.
Right. You find your tribe. You're able to go to maybe other countries and other parts of the world where you're like, oh my God, you're just like me, but in Shibuya or whatever. Right. Right. And travel around. Where were some of the first places that it took you that you remember?
San Diego. I remember San Diego was like one of the first. I was kind of tripping like, how do you guys know me? Oh, we saw you on MySpace. They just saw me on MySpace. Wow. And it's kind of like, you probably noticed, kind of like the more you work, things come your way.
Yes.
Right? You're seen and people are like, hey, I like this guy.
Yeah.
Let's bring him here.
Or, yeah.
You know, event planners, corporations, totally. You know, someone from Levi's is there and like, hey, we're doing this Levi's event.
Yeah. That's why it's always good to work. I mean,
When you're seen, then.
Totally.
It works out.
And it's hard because that is another battle of the internet, you know, talking about like, yo, I don't work for exposure. And like, yes, of course we don't. We have to pay our bills and we should get paid and we should constantly be pushing up the DJ rates and be respected. But at the same time, there are things you want to do to be able to keep working, you know, like you said. And even when you're in a rut, some of my friends will get in a rut and be like, I don't know what to do or my life's over. Or I'm quitting DJing. And I'm like, yo, go get a residency, you know, go DJ at that spot that you're avoiding. You might actually learn something or get motivated again in a different way. And that might lead to a bunch of other things. And it kind of does.
Well, I wanted to say before we started, we were just talking.
Yeah.
And you said we might play a club one night and the room's empty.
Yeah.
But that one person is there. Right. That you made an impact on. And then, you know, things take off from there.
Well, exactly. So, yeah, we were saying
if you weren't playing there, you wouldn't have been seen by that person.
And that's why you have to treat everything with respect, you know, whether it's a DJ gig or a podcast or you're making a playlist or you're working on music consulting or whatever it is. If it seems trivial at the moment, you don't really know. And you want to put your best foot forward for your own integrity, probably. And also because you never know what the hell is going to happen.
You never know who's listening or who's watching.
Exactly. From the MySpace page, you know, to doing a podcast, to DJing, you know, in a what could seem like an empty room, you know. Right. And that's a good point. I mean, I feel like we've both been in the game a long time. You've been doing this longer than I have. I was saying when I did college radio up at Sonoma State and I was like for a while the hip hop director and couldn't afford records. You know, it was a good way to get free tickets to like all the shows. Yeah. I would be like, oh, they got a, you know, show with Goody Mob and Souls of Mischief and Outkast and, you know, in San Francisco, I get free tickets if I'm the DJ and we would get free promo records. And you had a record label called Conception Records. Right. And I mean, every time I would get a record, I would put the needle down. I would listen. I'd be like, this is the craziest beat first off. And then you'd work with rappers I'd never heard of too. So I was getting exposed to new rappers that I could become a fan of and producers and just crazy beats of just like samples that had been insanely manipulated. And that's probably might have been some of the first place I heard Jake One.
Right.
And a lot of that stuff, it's still burned in my mind. Before we were meeting today, I was trying to look it up on Spotify and BeatSource and all that. I couldn't find it.
Yeah, no, I don't have it up anywhere.
And I found on YouTube people that had ripped, right, you know, some of them. And it brought back crazy memories and even feelings of like being in this room listening to these records up in the Bay Area in like the mid 90s. And it's those records still sound dope. You know, they really kind of hold their own.
They stood the test of time.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are expensive now. People want them, you know.
Is that true? I got to go dig through. I won't sell it. I got that free promo. Now it's going to pay off. It's like the stock market about 30 years later.
Yeah, so speaking on that too, you said, you know, you got to go to free shows and you got free records. And I've learned over the years that being a professional working DJ is one of the biggest coupons in your life.
Yes.
You get a lot of perks that come along with it.
Oh my God. It was like, that was why I was DJing. Honestly, my motivation for DJing was this, what the hell is this? It looks so fun and I need to do this. Right. Seeing rave DJs DJ and listening to DJs like DJ Premier and all the hip hop producers and the scratching and then seeing it in person, I'm like, I need to do this. But then it got to the point where it was so fun to introduce people to new music and things they had never heard or old music they didn't know or the sample right. of the song. And that's where college radio kind of came in. And, you know, I never even pictured being like, hey, look at me, I'm a DJ. Right. Like, that's not what I wanted to do.
We love this shit.
Yes, exactly.
And we still do, clearly.
Yes, otherwise we wouldn't be doing it.
That's why we're sitting yes. with each other.
Right and we're now. Talking about it before we go do it at night tonight.
Right. And that's also something I wanted to bring up because you said, you know, what's the secret to longevity or doing this?
Yeah.
And it's to not quit. Like yes. you said, you yeah. have to do that one gig you might not want to do.
Right.
It's probably a good idea to actually do it.
Yeah.
Right. But the secret is don't quit.
Don't quit. Keep finding a way to renew your love for it if you lose it. And a lot of times that's going back to where it started. Occasionally I'll just go you know, a lot of time, but like go have if I'm not motivated, or even if I'm going to do some Vegas club that they don't want to hear any of this, I'll go have a scratch session in my room.
Right.
I'll use DJ Rectangle record. You know what I mean? Some record where I had four records at the time. And this was one of them. I'll bring back those sounds and it brings back this love for it just immediately, you know, or make a beat or just do something for no reason in a way that has no purpose, you know, and not right. like I got to make this intro for a Vegas show and make sure, you know, Sheck West goes into Kendrick yeah. Lamar, you know, which I'm going to do and people are going to love it. Yeah. But I have to go back to the spark of it, I guess, to keep it going. And I mean, I think DJing, it's like a relationship, you know, like
it is,
it's like a marriage, like we're married to this shit. You could get divorced if you want, you know, or you can go to therapy,
figure it out,
make it work
it out.
Yeah, exactly. And go back to the, you know, you'd lose it and bring it back. So I think that's something that we could delve into and learn, you know?
Yeah, I've seen certain DJs quit every week for the last 10 years.
Yeah, no, exactly. I've seen DJs, you know, we've seen a lot of DJs come and go. I think the DJ, the lure of it was huge up till the pandemic, and that eliminated a lot of people. Now a lot are coming back.
Well, I have a theory on that. It eliminated a lot, but it also made a lot. Because everybody that dreamed or wanted to be a DJ all of a sudden was.
True.
Because they were at home with nothing to do and they started live streaming and DJing.
That's true. And also every other industry, like things would be shut down or they're work from home and they're like, yo, I'm going to do this. Like the amount of lawyers that hit me up that want to be a DJ, which is hilarious. I'm like, I think you're good. Like just stick with that, you know, a DJ on the side. I don't think you should quit being a lawyer and become a professional DJ unless you really want to.
And that's crazy too. I see a lot of people like that are well off.
Right.
They don't act, they like don't do it really as a need hobby. To do anything. No. They're like, I want a DJ. I'm just thinking, I wonder why they want to do that.
Right. I mean, I think there's probably different motivations. More of the attention hungry people just see oh, that's a job where people look at you and you control them, you know. But I think some of the other people just probably love music and maybe have always wanted to play an instrument and it's something interesting to them. You know, who knows?
Right.
That would be an interesting podcast.
Well, I think guys like you, you make it look good and you make it look easy.
Right.
And so they think, oh, I can do that.
Yeah.
Because you make it look so easy.
Right.
So they think there's nothing to it.
That's why I like when they come see me DJ and then I try to do some things that make it look hard. Go try to do this. But I think that that's where the versatility comes in. And that's where people who have been doing this for a long time and the original DJs, they approach it with a versatility because there was no like, I'm this kind of DJ. Like we were just buying records and we were just trying to get dope music. And of course we love hip hop and hip hop is the base of all of it. But hip hop leads us to find the old electro, the old funk, the old soul, the jazz and all the things that then lead into everything else. Right.
And that is hip hop, which has changed now, which people just think, oh, it's rap.
Right.
But no, it was, I said hip hop was the first open format DJ.
Yes, I agree. Because
you played everything.
Yes.
And you made it funky with the way you played.
Totally.
The way you rocked.
Exactly. And you're taking songs and you're cutting up the parts of it that can make people dance and all that. But exactly, it's the first open format DJ, which is why I feel like you still kill it in multiple venues. I mean, you've done everything from hockey games recently, right?
Yeah.
A couple months ago, you're doing the Seattle Kraken.
I'm doing it again, coming up 2 weeks.
You're able to do that, which I want to get into and talk about. You do Seattle Seahawks Super Bowl event. You know, you're doing sports DJing. You're able to do weddings, but with your flavor, and people are going to get an amazing wedding DJ. You're able to do corporate gigs, brand gigs, club gigs, but also your specialized vinyl gigs. You have your own club where you basically probably do exactly whatever you want, right? And you can travel the world literally and do those different things in those different places. And that comes from being the first open format DJ, you know, hip hop.
Right. No, definitely. That's where it
comes
from.
And all the knowledge, right?
Right. It comes from that. Because I was saying when I started, when you DJed, that was it. I'm a DJ.
Right.
Well, you know what that means? It means you play everything.
Yeah.
You scratch. Yeah, I dab a little or whatever. But you DJ, you did it all.
Yeah.
You weren't like, I'm a drum and bass DJ.
Right.
I'm a house DJ. Like
exactly.
DJ, DJ.
Yeah. And you could apply it to anything. I mean, going back to DJ Scene, he's a good example of like his 2080s mixes or whatever it is. Scene obviously is an incredible hip hop DJ, incredible at scratching, incredible at the technical aspects of it, but he can apply that to other things. And so do we. And that's what I feel like a good DJ can do. You take your own, you develop your own flavor, your own style, and then you can apply it to anything, you know? And that's why the corporate gigs are actually fun now in a way, if you get the right ones, you know?
I agree. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I like those better than nightclubs.
Totally. I heard you on something else say some hilarious shit because you're like, at the end of the night, you're not getting shot at. You're getting a steak dinner.
Right. And I'm like, you're home in bed by 2 and you ate a steak dinner.
Exactly.
And you probably got paid more.
You got paid way more. You got treated way better. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. They respect you so much.
Right.
Oh, what do you need here? And all this stuff. And I feel like as it grows, that's a nice thing, you know, to be able to bring to the, and what we bring to the table is the knowledge of the psychology of the crowd work.
Right.
The knowledge of the depth of the DJ music. So if we see the crowd going in different ways, we know what bag to start dipping into or how to mix an 80s song with a new song or where they relate or anything like that. Right.
Right. I did this crazy one and they had different rooms in the venue. So they booked me for the hip hop room. And when I got there, I think they said, oh, Fleetwood Mac's performing.
Oh, my God.
Like, they had some big room. So the crowd happened to be mostly, like, older rockers, and they all came into the hip-hop room. But I read that, and I rocked. I just, oh, I can't do this hip-hop. I'm going to have to do this. And
exactly.
It worked.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the people thanked me. They tipped me great.
Amazing.
But that's what it came from, right? I was like,
right.
Oh. I know I got booked for this. I know they want me for this, but this is what we're going to have to do right now.
Yeah. No, I mean, I feel like a good DJ is almost like I mean, you're like the Terminator. Like, you analyze, you go in.
There's
a little box on everybody's face. You know what I mean? And you're like analyzing from the way they're dressed, how old they are, the way they're moving, the way their head's bobbing to the current song.
The best thing is when Four Color showed the shoes. He showed pairs of shoes. I don't know if you saw it.
I did not see that.
And said, what song do we play for this guy? And he showed different pairs of shoes.
That's why he's a genius, right. Okay? Well, among other things. I mean, I don't know. There's something in the water in Seattle for sure to have some musical geniuses in terms of DJing, music producing, you know, and all that. I mean, like I said, Jake One, just so legendary.
Monster.
You know, you, Scene, Four Color Zach, and there's tons more. Yeah. But I mean, to this day, you guys are all still so productive in a sort of like breaking barriers way. Just keep going and doing new things and haven't lost motivation or been complacent or just do the same thing, you know? Even when you heard Jake One producing beats back in the day, would you think he'd be doing all the things he's doing now?
No.
It's crazy.
I didn't think I'd be doing what I'm doing now.
I know, like, same. Yeah. And even Four Color Zach. I mean, you know, like, I remember him coming up and now what he's
doing.
So
you know what's the funny story about me and Zach is I used to see him in record stores.
Yeah.
And I used to always think, who's the little kid that's always in the record store? But he wasn't little, he just looked like he was 12 years old at the time. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then he left the store one day or something. And then I remember somebody said, oh, he's a whack DJ. That kid, he's a whack DJ. I said, I don't remember. I said, well, what makes him whack? But I went to something like a week later, he was playing and I was floored. He was dope as crazy.
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 Like, mind blowing dope.
But he was playing all this weird stuff that I played.
Oh, okay.
And I thought, that's why they think he's whack, because he's not playing the top 40 hits they're used to or want to hear, right? If you go outside the box, sometimes they look at you weird. They either love you or they hate you.
Yes.
And we just clicked. His birthday is the day after mine.
Okay.
And like, we talked that night. We just clicked. We were like twins, like peas in a pod.
That's great.
But it was funny that he was playing all this stuff. I'm like, wait, I play that. Like, and we were like the only two people that play that.
Right.
You know, but
I mean, that's DJ life.
But then I thought, oh, well, that's why they thought he was whack.
Right. Hilarious.
He's not playing everything that's on the radio.
No, like, I mean, I used to throw this like a audio visual party here called Sure Shot with Mr. Best and Steve Wonder. And we would do video DJing. We would bring down Peanut Butter Wolf and Shortcut and everyone that was in the video game. And we put together these crazy video sets. And Four Color Zach would design the flyers sometimes, and Steve Wonder knew him. And I remember I hadn't really heard him DJ. And then he went in three style, and I was like, oh, I'm going to hear the mix that the graphic designer did. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait, what the hell is this? I'm like, this is,
you know,
like
he wasn't even
the
gonna,
best
he
thing
wasn't
I've so, ever heard
wasn't
in my
supposed
life.
To do it.
That's crazy.
They had like an opening slot and they needed one person. And I think someone suggested them. They just wanted somebody to do it.
I mean,
and he wasn't even going to do it. He told me, no, I'm not. Right. I said, no, do that. Do
that's
it.
Life changer for him. You know what I mean? Because now he's one of the representatives of that world.
I told everybody he's going to win. And they're like, no, such and such is in and blah, blah, blah. I said, he's going to win.
But there you go. There's that creativity, those left turns, those curveballs, those weird songs that people will say you're whack for.
Just the
but you want to stand
cleverness
out.
Is
yes.
Just-
I'd rather have people hate me. Like I used to say that. Like I'd rather get fired from a club for playing a weird thing that they didn't like than just play the same thing and sound like everybody else and blend in. And then still eventually get fired.
So there was a casino I was doing. And the booker called me, said, yeah, the bar manager said you don't play like the other guys. And I was like, that's a compliment. Like,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
I hope not.
Right.
Like,
how else are you going to get remembered if you play like everyone else? You're going to blend in like a chameleon.
No, I've always said that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one's going to remember.
No. You have to give them something to remember, even if it's something they hate. Like
that's why I say when you throw the curveball, they're going to love you or they're going to hate you.
Yep.
But they're going to remember.
Yeah. I've had so many things like that that have led to life-changing experiences. You know, even being in New Orleans, I remember I was DJing this thing. It was like Reggie Bush's party. It was the first home game for the Saints after Hurricane Katrina. And I'm DJing and they were like, Little John is here. And I was like, oh, man. And it was, this was like prime mashup time, you know, right. in Serato. And I had everything. I had these edits. And I remember I had the snap your fingers. And I had figured out this trick in Serato where if I recorded in every single piece of vinyl into my Serato. So I would record them and I would edit them in like Cubase or something and always do the cut at the same time. And I realized if you loaded the acapella on the track that was playing, it would just sound like you dropped the beat out. It was like an accident. You know, it was like when you load the track and it would be the wrong track. And so I was like, oh, I can drop endless beats if I keep doing that, you know, under the thing. And so I had this snap your fingers mix where I would start off with the beat, drop it to the acapella with that thing and drop in Khalees Milkshake and then end it with Def Leppard, Pour Some Sugar on Me, and then take the Little John saying, hey, sounded exactly like the Def Leppard guy saying, dun, 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 hey, and I would like do it and I would have him in the chorus and I would go back and forth and they're like, Little John's here. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do that mix. I'm like, he's going to hate this shit. I don't know he's actually open-minded about music at the time, but I'm like, he's going to hate this and I'm going to do it. It's going to be hilarious. And I did it and it turned out, you know, he rolls up. Oh my God, this is amazing. Like, I want to learn how to use Serato. We end up becoming friends. I come to his house here. We put together, we do all these mixtapes and tour together. And like, you know, you never know what that curveball is going
to
lead to.
So somebody, I don't remember who it was, but they said they played a Chicago street player in the club one night and Little John was there. They said he ran up to the booth and was like, what is this? What is this? And was like writing it down and putting his phone. And a couple months later, Pitbull came out using that. And they think that that Little John heard it that night and then made the note of it and made the track out of it.
That could be true. I remember, oh man, Pitbull's good at that. I remember.
Oh, he's the best at it.
I knew some people that worked on his team really closely, you know, getting him those songs. And I remember when Avicii Levels came out and I'm there and I'm like, yo, you got to check out the, you know, I DJ in Vegas every week. You got to hear this. This crazy song is blowing up. And I play it for them and they're like, oh, this is cool. And they were like on his team. And then you just, and then not long later, I hear, oh, there's a song with Pitbull rapping on Avicii Levels.
Imagine.
So then I noticed everything I'd play for them. I was like, he's rapping. What are you guys? Right. I'm going to stop playing you guys these songs.
Yeah. But he grabbed a Tuxedo track and used it on his album.
He did?
Yeah.
That's kind of dope.
It was dope because I'm like, oh, this is where we're headed. I hope everybody goes in this direction.
I love that. I know. I mean, going back to it, it's like Pitbull actually has some feel good, dope songs, you know, and that someone that made that house song and they sampled the, I forgot what it was, Funky Nassau or something. And he sampled that. And I mean, you know, maybe at the time it seems like, oh, I don't want to play this. But then they've become these like songs you can drop all over and in the corporate events and all that. That's crazy. And one more thing I wanted to talk about the beginnings of Seattle DJing was, you know, sometimes on the show, like we have so many stories, sometimes people don't have stories of failure or bad things, but I've got many of them and I'm happy to tell them and still be able to, you know, be successful DJ. But, you know, I mean, being a DJ for a long time, you deal with a lot of bad things that happen to you. I've been
pulled. Especially when you think you've seen it all.
Yes.
Comes something new.
I've had some horrible things, but I was saying one of my worst things was in Seattle DJing at this club and just I'm in the middle of my set and, you know, it's the beginning of me traveling around. So I'm very nervous about every gig and just like, oh God, I need everything to go good. And it's the beginning of Serato. And I remember just playing and the power goes out and everything's out and it won't come back on. To the point where it just keeps going and going and going. And the promoter's like, what's happening? And the crowd starts chanting, refund, refund, which I was like, what are they saying? And I realized they're saying refund. And I'm like, oh God, a whole crowd chanting refund to my face. Then 20 minutes go by, you see them leaving. It turned out someone had pulled the fire alarm or something. And we don't know if it was like a sabotage from another club or, and then it finally comes back on after like 30 minutes, 3/4 of the club had left. The promoter's like, you need to keep everybody here. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to quick mix and do whatever I can, you know,
and all the stops
at that point, you know, I was just like, what can happen? So I just DJed to like a quarter of the people there.
I do know for a while though, you know, around that era too, there was, promoters would really do those kind of things.
That's what they said happened.
No, seriously.
Yeah.
There was one promoter that would send someone to another club and they would shoot in the air. And then they'd say the club got shot up or something.
I do remember a lot of shooting. There were a lot of stories about the shooting stuff outside and all that. Wow, that's good. And I was like, damn, Seattle's crazy like that. Yeah. That's nuts. Yeah, I don't think I ever went back after that for a very long time.
The bad thing about that is some of the clubs had bad crowds, right? Not all of them, but you have your clubs. And then so when those did get shut down, that crowd would move to another club. And then that club would eventually get shut down because the crowd was so rowdy.
There was also a lot of 18 and over clubs.
Yeah, there was.
Because wasn't that Matty O from MySpace, Matt Osborne? He was in Seattle promoting these huge 18 and over events, I think, right?
Yeah.
And that's probably how, because we did end up doing a lot of MySpace things up there. I wonder if that's why.
I think so.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, I still talk to those dudes, Ted, Matt, all them. So shout to them. But, man, well, let's go back and, you know, talk about, you know, your amazing career and where it started and where it is. Like, how did you, when and how did you get into DJing? It was in the 80s?
Yeah, I think it was 83.
Okay, that's crazy. So you've seen the evolution of this.
But prior to that, I was already buying records. Since a kid, I don't know why, I was infatuated with records.
That was your baseball card.
Okay. I think it's because I saw this piece of plastic spinning around and sound came out of it. And I'm like, the hell? Trying to figure out how that works.
Yes.
And then the covers would be like real psychedelic looking, like colorful, and they draw you into them.
Yeah.
So I was always buying records. And around then, I had already caught wind of hip hop. I had went to New York, witnessed basically almost the birth, you know, it had been going on, but it was close. It wasn't that old yet.
Yeah.
And the Treacherous Three had came to Seattle. And when they performed, it's kind of like you said earlier, I saw the DJ and he was incredible. It was the first time I saw a DJ cut two copies and go back to back with a break. Mm-hmm. Behind the back, spin around, under the leg, his nose. I'm like, yo, I just lost my mind. Right. And I was like, I got to learn that. I want to do that. And so that's really what got me started into DJing. I was already dancing and buying records. But so at that point, I learned how to DJ. And I was like, I got to learn how to go back and back and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I did all that. And then eventually people knew. I never said I was a DJ. I never called myself a DJ. People knew I did it. Mm-hmm. And I think I was like 16 when I got my first gig because a DJ got the flu and he couldn't work that night. And somebody that worked there knew I DJed and they said, hey, we need somebody. Can you do it?
Wow.
I think they said, pay $100 for the night or something. I'm like, $100 to DJ? I'm there. Like,
yeah.
And of course I bombed totally, completely. I didn't know what I was doing. And I was cutting up and doing and trying to be fancy. And I'm like, oh, this crowd wants to dance. They're there to hear the song and party. And I was like, oh, I better learn how to really DJ, not just showcase, basically. Showboat or showcase, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I remember some of my first realizations of that, too. It was like, you know, I would be buying everything from drum and bass records to funk records to underground hip hop and doing the radio station and then getting booked to do an 80s party.
Right. Exactly.
And I went and I tried doing what I thought was 80s and cool and scratching and it did not go good, you know, and it made me realize a couple things. Girls want to dance and don't want to hear and see all the crazy show off stuff.
It took me a long time to figure that part out.
I was like, girls want a different thing, you know, and obviously I'm generalizing and, you know, there's different, but basically the basic thing of it was that, you know, and then realizing, they want to hear these songs. They want to sing along to them. Right. They don't want me to chop everything up like crazy, like I'm in my bedroom, but we need to find a happy medium because I don't want to do exactly what they want and I want to do what I want as well.
Right.
So it's learning, you know, and even to this day, we're constantly learning. You know, I feel like the ability of...
I'm a student.
Yeah.
I'm learning every day.
I'm constantly learning, curious, from new equipment to new music to old music.
That's why I asked the younger DJs, what can you teach me? Because I really want to learn from their perspective.
Right. Yeah. I think we can all learn from each other. That's why I love being around younger DJs, older DJs, everybody, and just other DJs, period, and just hearing their, you know, perspective. And it's hard now because we are so connected by the internet and everybody's so – they compare each other to each other so much that they become each other in a way. Because even I was writing DJs in Vegas today, like, yo, I'm doing a new club that I haven't done – since 2020, it got bought. It's owned by new people. I do it this Friday. And, you know, I know what to do in Vegas. But at the same time, I want to know, I don't know, is there anything different at this club? Is there anything different in Vegas right now? I've asked like a few DJs I trust out there and everyone has the same answer. You know, like, same shit. You know, and you're like,
different year.
All right.
Same shit, different year.
So, and then I try to bring my different thing to the table. Sometimes it could be frowned upon. Sometimes it can lead to new things, like we said. But yeah, it's a different time now, and it's not as local. And Vegas is such a touristy place.
Right. The thing with Vegas is, you know, people are there to party. They go there to party. They're ready to go.
Yeah.
You can walk in at 9 p.m. and they're rah-rah, ready to rock.
Yeah.
So to be honest, Vegas isn't tough. That's easy to DJ.
Right.
They're ready to party.
There are some cool, eclectic spots popping up, though.
Definitely.
You've been going there and doing them, too, right?
Yeah, I did the new one in Durango last week.
Wax Rabbit.
Yeah,
Wax Rabbit. I went there a couple weeks ago, actually. Yeah. I saw Spite Attack playing.
Yeah.
It was fun. Good little vibe. And like,
it was super fun because I guess it had just opened and it had been kind of slow because people don't even, you know, it's hard to find, right? People weren't getting in there.
Well, you walk in this casino that's probably 15 minutes off the strip.
Yeah,
it's a very nice casino. It has everything from Uncle Paulie's sandwiches to all these incredible
dope casino.
Oh, dope casino, dope spot, and really cool. What is it? A Mexican restaurant?
Yes.
And then you have to find the special door to go into this Wax Rabbit
hidden spot.
Yeah, and they got amazing drinks, dope DJs, all vinyl.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, I know you've been doing that, and shout to Mac Agency.
I was gonna say, shout out
Eddie Mac, you know,
Mac Vinyl Collective,
Eddie Mac. I mean, you know, he's been another person that's a vet, OG, whatever you want to call it, legend, but someone that's been in the DJ game for a long time and also helped to push boundaries and things in Las Vegas and seen the evolution of everything from the vinyl days in Vegas into the digital days and now back to the vinyl.
Right, back to square one.
Yeah, it's amazing to see him doing that and the different places that he's providing incredible, talented vinyl DJs to, you know, and connecting them to the venues.
It's kind of what you said earlier about finding that spark and finding that love.
Yeah.
And playing records to me is just fun. It just makes DJing fun again.
Right.
Right.
It's always
fun. I think because, well, I like 45s a lot.
Yeah.
Because I think they're a challenge. They're not too easy. They're kind of hard to play.
Just to
with.
Manipulate physically, you mean? And to
manipulate.
Find.
Yeah. Right. But then they're usually 2 minutes long.
Yeah.
You have a quick.
You're working.
You got to, what's
it's
next?
Not
what's
the 7 minute extended?
And you got to go find the next record.
That's true.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
It's almost like a Master of the Mix challenge.
That's funny. It's like you're on a tightrope or something.
Right.
You're like, yo, I can't fall off this. Like, that's true. And it could skip at any moment. It just
all kinds of things.
You had to. And everything means something. I mean, there's something about the artwork that you said, that's what attracted you to be a DJ as a child. And the artwork is the thing that speaks to you as a DJ. When we used to go through our crates, each piece of artwork within a millisecond would create a sound in our brain.
A sound
that's crazy.
And embed in your brain.
Right.
You always would remember the cover, what it looks like.
Yeah.
People used to say, you have this record. I said, what's it look like? Oh, yeah, I have that.
Exactly.
Because I knew, right?
Yeah. It's like these records.
And Serato's just text. It's like reading a text on your phone. You're just going, scrolling through songs.
Yeah.
And it can get weird.
It's true. And records.
Because I think sometimes, I want to play this. I'm like, well, what's it called? I'm thinking, what's it called? What's it called? I know what it looks like. Yeah. I know what the record looks like.
Right. And then when I read a few other things, it gets erased from my brain. There's something about the text. And I've tried to like put on the artwork mode and go through, but it's not the same.
I can't do it.
It doesn't work. But it's crazy how these each piece of vinyl is like its own time traveler or own like way to bring you back to a time, because you could literally remember for the most part where you got it down to like the smell of the place, who you were with.
That's so funny. Thank you for saying that, because I was going to talk about the smell. I was like, no, that's too weird. I'm not going to talk about that.
No, literally, I can remember.
You remember.
I can remember everything from looking at the artwork of a record, literally within probably a 1 second calculation, like the amount of smell, sensory memories that come
back. So let me ask you this. What was the first record you bought?
Oh, man. I don't know. Like I said, probably I wanted to. Well, so I was going to raves here in downtown L.A. and I loved hip hop. I was very into like Tribe Called Quest, Wu-Tang, Nas, like all that, you know, early 90s stuff. But I was going to raves and I was just discovering, probably by the time I could buy records and I got turntables, or my friend had turntables and I could buy the records to put on them, drum and bass and jungle was starting to be right. A big thing. So I remember I probably bought a couple jungle drum and bass records, but the two ones I remember very vividly that I would always use were these DJ Rectangle records, The blue and the cream colored one. And it was because they had beats on them. They had scratch sounds. They had like all the stuff I needed that I
all
could just
tools,
go back
all
and
the
forth
DJ
with
tools you needed
for 12 hours a day, you know, and
shout
just,
out Rectangle too.
Yeah. Shout out Rectangle. I mean, because also I had his mixtapes, literal tape, and I would listen to it and I'd be like, how the hell is he doing this? That made me discover that four tracks, people are using four tracks. Mm-hmm. And then I finally bought a four track and realized I could layer my scratches. But I thought at the time, he's just doing this all at once. Right. Like I'm trying to, you know, conceive of how that's possible. But I think I just remember those two Rectangle records, which I still have and mess with. And then probably I was just trying to find something cheap, you know, that was like a rave record, you know. Right. And then I slowly started buying the things that I knew and liked. And then I would go digging in the stores and be going to Fat Beats and Beat Nonstop and all these stores on Melrose. And
oh, Melrose was crazy back
then. I mean, there was like this Valley of the Shadows or something, Origin Unknown. It was like 31 seconds. And it was like this jungle drum and bass record, but it sounded so crazy to me. Right. So I had to find that. That was one of my first ones. And
I asked because I feel like, you know, I feel like no matter how old someone is, you can ask them, what's the first record you bought? And they can usually tell you.
Yeah.
Now, if I asked you, what was the first MP3 you ever got? Would you know what that is?
God, no.
No one remembers that.
No, I don't remember the first. I remember.
But we remember the record because we looked at it.
Well, that's the thing. It has a special place, you know. Somehow all DJs can remember every BPM of every song ever, too. Like,
so I never in my life, I never BPM'd my records ever.
Right.
And I never have a set. I never say, I'm going to play these 10 records tonight.
Okay.
Because I got to read the crowd. I don't know who's going to be in attendance.
True.
And so people used to ask me, well, how do you put your records together? I said, I grab them and throw them in a case. They said, you don't have an order? No. I just go, right?
Yeah.
But I'd know in my head, okay, this mix is good with this. Later, when Serato came out and it BPM'd everything, I noticed everything I'd mixed, all the BPMs were the same.
Me too, with keys.
But
too.
I just,
was like, yes, I did it.
Right. But I just knew it
at
from
the
knowing
time,
the,
I was just like,
I just
this
knew
should
it
work.
From knowing the records.
Yes.
Knowing the music.
Yeah. No, and same. I would have my records unorganized and I'd realize certain, okay, this Michael Jackson record always goes with this one. Right. It's crazy. I'm putting them right next to each other.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't really do it by genre. I didn't even think about BPM until I watched that movie Scratch and I saw Z-Trip talk about having a little machine that he would push and he would take those sticker records and write the BPM and stick it on every record. And I was like, I never thought about that, you know? And then within a year or so, Serato comes out after that movie, I think. And so I had just started trying to BPM the records then. And then I realized, why am I doing this? I got this program, you know, that I can do it. But yeah, it is crazy, but that's also, I think, maybe why vinyl is coming back, because all of these kids have grown up in the only digital age. They didn't get to experience that at all. And now vinyl is becoming this big thing because they're realizing the importance of having this physical thing and how it can create these core memories or these special connections to music that you can't necessarily have digitally.
Right. It's just dope to be able to see who produced it, who plays on it, where did they record it?
Right.
Like things like that are little extra things you learn.
Right.
Like,
no, I love that. Reading all the liner notes. I still say with like these digital sites, I wish they just had a button where you click it and you're in the liner notes and you're right. skipping through. I don't want to have to click the three buttons, go to the thing, go to song credits, read whatever someone intern entered in. I want the real shit. Right. You know,
just look at it. Yeah.
Yeah. And like go through and then you connect that to all the other things and that leads to the different music you want to buy, download, you know, all that. So, so you got in the game so early, but, then how did that lead to everything that you did in Seattle and like all the trajectory of your career with the B-boy cruise and the dancing into the owning the record label and
right. So basically just DJing and then the love of hip hop and then like Public Enemy came out. Eric B and Rakim was like 86 to 88 was an incredible time.
Yeah.
For hip hop, right. rap music. And I think it also gets lost in the sauce sometimes because a lot of people will call early 90s golden era. And I'm like, well, actually, it's the late 80s or the 80s to me.
Right.
Right. Because all that stuff came out of the 80s. It came from those groups. It came, when, and we talk about this too, EPMD, De La Soul, Eric B. and Rakim, Stetson Sonic, Public Enemy, all these groups, they all sounded different. Not one of them sounded alike.
So different.
But it was all the same genre, right? Everybody yeah. had their own identity. They were groups. Mm-hmm. They did the music themselves. They weren't hiring producers. They weren't hiring writers. It wasn't put together like nowadays.
The goal right. was to find drums that didn't sound like other drums and right. were still dope.
Right.
And samples. And it was also the sampling. You know, it was the digging with all the genres of music. Like you said, the true open format DJing and being right. able to take these different types of music and flip them into something. And then that evolves into like people like Dilla and stuff being able yeah. to flip things that people are just realizing in the year 2024 and things,
like
you know,
I know. Like, oh, that was that.
But right.
Yeah. So all that. And then there were like rappers around that I knew.
Local rappers right. in Seattle.
So they'd ask me to DJ for them, be their mm-hmm. DJ.
Right.
Would do shows. And then from that point, my dream was to make a record.
Like, yeah.
let's make a record. Got my first drum machine, got a keyboard. And I think it was kind of just like, I think it's a natural evolution. I think from DJing, you kind of get into production a little bit.
Yes.
It's kind of like, you know what works and you know, like how things like, oh, how did they make this record? It kind of goes back to the liner notes. Oh, they used the Korg such and such
yeah.
or the Roland 909 or what's that bass? Oh, that's called an 808, right?
Yeah.
And then so I started buying equipment. I wanted to make a record.
Yeah.
And then that's how that evolved and how my label evolved.
Right. So you lead into Conception Records. You guys put out a lot of music, right?
Yeah. So we had a deal through Sub Pop.
Okay.
So shout out to Nirvana because they signed the big deal and Sub Pop got a lot of money. And then Sub Pop gave us our deal.
Wow, that's incredible. So without, grunge led to underground hip hop having a voice from Seattle.
Yes.
That's dope. I mean, in both kind of 90s sounds that came out of just having fun and doing it for the love of
it. Because we love it.
Yeah. In both scenes. Was there ever a mix of the grunge scene and the underground hip hop scene up there?
No.
It was very, very separate, right? I feel like nowadays people can be like, it's together, but right. back then it was like, no.
That wasn't.
You were a hip hop person.
That's cap.
That's cap, bro. Hey, bro. That's as my son says. The 11-year-old slang. I'm learning a lot of slang. My son's hitting that moment where he's like, you don't know what this means. You don't know what this means.
Yeah, my son says something about his boy has riz. And I was like,
riz. How old is your son?
14.
Okay, my son's 11.
Yeah.
So definite riz talk.
So I'm learning a little here and there.
I'm learning riz talk. There's some Fortnite slang coming in now where I'm just like, yo, I don't know what you're talking about. But it's you know, got to stay in the mix. they keep us young and old, feeling old.
DJing keeps us young, I feel like.
It does. Yeah, I agree.
Even though, true story, I don't know about yourself, though I felt like I haven't slept, well, now I sleep a lot, but there was like a 20-year period where I felt like I didn't really sleep.
Yo.
I felt like I had 10 hours of sleep in 20 years.
Yeah, like, it's the truth. Like, I posted this thing on my Instagram today, and it was like,
I feel like during COVID, I slept for 3 years. I just went into hibernation and made up for lost time.
I
feel like
I was going to, and I didn't. I still stayed up every night. But you're right. I would sleep in a lot. But, like, yeah, like, this dude, this guy, Asher Perlman, like, he does New Yorker cartoons, and he wrote this thing. He's like, I'm a little wiped out because I didn't get enough sleep last night or the previous 1,000. Right. It was like, I was like, there's me right there. You know what I mean? Because
let's talk about that. DJing is a rough life.
Oh my God.
I think like an outsider, a non-DJ, they think it's glitz and glamour.
Right.
Like, damn, you're in Vegas or you're doing this.
Now we've been through the war zones, guys. We've been through the war zones, even to the, like you said, some dangerous nights. Like the club nightclubs did not used to be legal, or you know, like there was a lot of nefarious activity going on, right? Like things were paid in cash for a reason. People owned things for a reason. You know, there was a whole different world that we made it through. But also, it's just. And people weren't pushing the health benefits of sleep, food, earplugs. You know, there's all types of stuff. You know, like my ears, I got crazy tinnitus. Like it rings all the time. It's been at least 12, 15 years of it, you know. And like even this week, I've been noticing it's like really bad. And there's things like that. You know, I'm not out there like, yo, tinnitus, shout out. I'm going to talk to you guys. But it's like... Wear earplugs, you know, things that no one ever told us, you know, that we didn't know.
Learned the hard way.
Yeah.
Trial and error.
It was the beginning of all that, you know. So,
But a lot of people talk about health now, and I like that. I'm here for it.
Yes. Yeah. I've had a lot of people on the show teach me about it, and the way that they approach it is inspirational. I'm still like, damn, I need to get on your tip, you know, like from the working out to the eating good. But even if you can change little habits and learn from each other in that sense, I think that's good. Because sleep, it's hard. The more info that comes out now, how important sleep is, which obviously we knew, but now it's like more, you know, knowledge
very
about
important.
It, but damn, it's hard.
And I don't know about you. When I'm done with a gig and I finally can lay down, my mind races like crazy.
Oh, yeah, totally. It takes a couple hours
to wind down for
it
sure.
Sucks. And then we always have to be somewhere.
What
early.
I used to do
yeah,
is
what
it
do
would
do?
Get light out and I'd say, oh, it's bedtime now because it's daytime.
I know.
I better lay down now.
And my body still reacts like that sometimes. It's like, because I'll be tired at like 9 p.m., but then it's at 11 p.m. It's like, boom, I'm awake. I'm ready to go. But like in the day, a lot of times, my body's like, all right, let's go to sleep. Now's your time.
Was
the
Stone
sun's
Rock
out.
On here talking about that?
He was on, I think, Headliner podcast with Eric Deluxe. He talks about it nonstop, period. Right. He listens to Huberman podcast and very big on sleep. And, you know, he's smart. I mean, the more you read about it, the longer people live and just benefits.
Know.
You know, it's not good. But it's hard. You know, we're in nightlife. It's called nightlife for a reason. Right. But that is something I learned from the DJs that strictly do like the sports DJing. I've had DJs on that just do like the soccer games or the volleyball, basketball and all those. And they're better at sleeping and doing these like, you know, more corporate and just staying in that world and not even doing that many clubs and stuff.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, you guys are smart, you know, taking a good approach to it, but it's tough. I still have not perfected the sleep or even come close. Like my sleep is in a horrible place. So
mine's much better these days.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good.
As soon as I come home, I'm laying down.
Okay. Like, but what about tonight? Like you're down here, you're going to play in LA.
Yeah, so tonight I'm down here. I'm going to play tonight, and I'm going to leave early on a flight back home, so I probably won't get any tonight.
Right, exactly. That's the hard part, you know. That's what's going to happen to me the next week. I got all those late night, early flight, nonstop, day. And then it just takes longer to recover from it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. But, yeah, I need a sleep vacation where I just get to sleep for, like, 2 weeks.
That's what COVID was. I think COVID was a much needed break that the world needed.
Yeah, it was. And it led people to a lot of things. Like we said, with DJ Scene, Four Color Zach. Oh, damn. What's up with the Seattle people taking over Twitch? I didn't even think about that. But two of the biggest streamers, very successful and the most creative. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many. I saw you on Boom Bap Kids stream. They're so creative.
I love that one.
How great is that?
Love that.
Yeah. I mean, I love what they do, what they did, and what they still do. So cool. Well, let's talk about, so you did all that. You've had this long career. I mean, we could probably talk for 5 hours about all of it, you know, just detail by detail. But I think it's incredible to just look at the longevity factor and the fact that you've done all that. You've seen people come and go. You've seen people come and go, you know, physically, probably, you know, through death and things, which we've seen a lot getting older, and we've lost so many amazing people in our life, as well as come and quit, you know, and have to do other things. And COVID made people get other jobs and all that stuff. But you're still going, you're killing it from everything from, you know, your own nightclub to these radio shows, to the corporate gigs, to doing the sports DJing and all that stuff. Let's talk a bit about your club. You have a place called Shibuya in Seattle, right?
Yeah. So me, and it's actually a former DJ, Nostalgia B. Okay. And he's been in the nightlife scene many years and owned various clubs, and Studio Q, who's also, he's a musician and owns various clubs. But me and B had talked about it, because when I was going to Japan, I'm seeing these bars and I'm like, we need one. How come America doesn't have this? Right. Like, this is crazy.
These vinyl bars. You mean.
Right. And even, I don't know if you've been out there, but even if you go to a coffee shop,
and they're going to have
vinyl, they have a better system than most clubs in America.
Right. Right.
Like, it's just nuts. Like,
that's true.
Like, why? What is this? Like, just pay attention to detail and quality on everything they do.
Right.
But so we had talked about it for years, and actually his parents met in one.
Wow.
So he has a long history with them.
Very cool.
And we talked about it, and that was it. And it was probably like about 10 years, and he hit me 6 months ago. I think we've been open for 6 months.
Oh,
he just amazing. Hit me, and Congrats. He's like, it's time.
Yeah.
And we did this. It. We all came together. They brought me into the fold, and It's happening.
And so the club's called Shibuya.
Right.
Which is named after a legendary neighborhood in Tokyo.
Right. We're paying tribute because we love us so much.
Yeah.
We want to pay tribute to that.
And what, like, I got a few questions. I mean, do you have a lot of records at the bar?
We don't. It's not traditional like that. We have some. Mm-hmm. Well, probably a lot to the normal person.
Yeah, you're like, we have some, like, 28,000 right. records. No.
But what makes ours unique is we have a separate room that's strictly for listening. Ooh. It's not just like a bar where you go in and sit down and there's a DJ. We have an actual listening room.
Wow.
Which we didn't know, but that's like took off as the main attraction.
And what does that mean exactly? What happens when you walk
in
the
listening
room?
Okay, so we'll pick a record. Whatever, David Bowie album or something, okay. And we post and promote, Thursday night from 8 to 11, we're playing this album.
Oh.
So people come there, maybe 30 minutes before the session, they have a drink.
It's like watching a movie.
Right. And they come in, we make you remove your shoes because that's like Asian tradition, but it's also, we have an expensive rug in there and we don't want people stepping on. So
what about the drinks?
It's basically, no drinking. You have to leave them out.
Oh, wow.
We have a tray and we cover them and you can put them on. So if you have a drink, you know, it'll be there after the session, but.
Oh, wow. So you sit in that room and you listen. Talk?
You can, but the funny thing, we've never said you don't have to, but people don't.
So mostly they listen and maybe make little comments like I'm in a movie or something.
It is. It's kind of like a movie.
Wow.
And it's almost kind of like we said earlier, you find your tribe because there's like all these David Bowie fans that came for that.
And then.
But some people just come because I'll ask at the beginning, how many people love this album? Like half of them have never heard the album. They're
just
there.
That's amazing though.
No, I know. Cooler. We're bringing people together through music.
And then can they travel back into the bar part of things where they can put their shoes on, have a drink and talk and do whatever?
Exactly.
And what's the time? Like how much you open? Like
we're open 5 to midnight.
5 to midnight.
Thursday through Saturday.
Okay.
That's but we're incredible. Also, like I said, that room has become such an attraction and kind of like movies. We're doing matinees like at noon on Saturday and they're selling out. People are coming through.
Because you buy a ticket to be in there now.
Yes. You go online and reserve your spot.
Has there been a more popular album or genre?
No, all of them sell out. Almost all of them sell out.
And what's the crowd like? Like age-wise, I guess.
Well, it's a bar, so you're 21. You have to be 21 to come in.
Of course. But is there much 21-year-olds or is there 65-year-olds?
There is. Amazingly, there's a lot of young people that come in.
Wow. That's very cool.
But you got to think, they've never heard music like they've only heard it on their pods or a computer.
Yeah.
They haven't heard Klipshorn speakers, you know.
And so, yeah, that was my next question. What are you playing it on? The turntable, the system, and the speakers and all
that.
Yeah,
so I played on the Klipshorns in Italy when I was touring, and I fell in love with them. And I said, if we're going to do this bar, I want these. We have to have these.
Wow.
And it's crazy. We found a pair pretty quick. Mm-hmm. They happened to be on consignment, and they came from the Klipsch rep for the Northwest, and Paul Klipsch actually hand-built those himself for the guy. So they actually come from Klipsch himself.
That's incredible.
And then we rented, well, they got a Marantz amp.
Okay.
And a Technics 1200 turntable.
Oh, dope. I was wondering if it was one of those new fancy.
But it's kind of like what I've noticed. If we play, say, like Frank Ocean or a newer record, they don't sound that good on those speakers.
I wonder why.
I think they're EQ'd different. I think they're EQ'd for pods and computers. They're EQ'd differently.
You're probably right.
But if you play Miles Davis, you're going to be like on cloud nine. Like it sounds like he's in the room playing.
I was
going to
say you're inside of the record.
Yeah. It's nuts.
What do you use, a specific needle?
Nostalgia B put the needle. I don't know what it was. I don't know what model number it was.
Just wondering. Sorry to get so nerdy, but I just want to know.
No, I mean, that's great. People ask all those questions. Like we have heavy audiophile guys coming in. Like,
sure.
How did you do this to the room? Like, what did you do to make it sound like this? Like,
right. And have you been enjoying being part of that, owning a club experience?
Yes and no.
That's what I was wondering, because I know.
No, I'm on both sides of the fence now.
What are the pros and cons, or what are the things that you've enjoyed, and what are the challenges?
And this is a different kind of place, right? So I enjoy that I can play whatever I want, choose to play, right?
And this is in the main room where the DJs are.
Right, in the main
room. All the DJs are vinyl as well? Or you
It's vinyl only, yes.
And so you'll bring a crate, you'll bring a bunch of 45s, some 12 inches.
I mean, we do have some records there that we can play, but.
But it's not like where Peanut Butter Wolf has like his collection here at Gold Line or something.
It's not like that.
So then what? So you love being able to play what you play.
I love being able to book people
and
dope. Even the owners were like, wow, we thought we knew every DJ in town. We realized we didn't know any of them. I'm bringing so many people through, different people, you know.
What are some of the challenges you've run into just over this short amount of time?
Oh, things like, so one of them is like when we close the doors to the listening session, the lounge sound kind of bleeds through the doors and it can interrupt the session.
Okay.
We don't want that. So we're like, well, how do we fix it? I'm like, well, we can get this heavy theater curtain and pull it. And it's going to block the sound. And like ordering that and then having the fire department come in and say, you guys can't have that. That's a fire hazard. No, nobody can run out. Right. So things like that, you know.
Right. Like you're like, oh, okay, interesting.
You're right.
Just small challenges that come up along the way.
There's a lot of them.
Because you're not just doing it. You're not doing it in someone else's club where you don't care, or you're not doing it in your house where there's no rules.
But my problem is I think I've always cared.
Too much?
Yeah. Because I would come into clubs. And I called the manager, hey, you know your mixer's broken. Oh, yeah, we know.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, oh, you know?
You know, I don't understand.
Are you going to fix it?
I'm like, how did no one else notice or say this?
Well, you know what they told me? You're the only one that complains. And I said, I'm not complaining. I'm letting you know. I'm not complaining.
A couple weeks ago. And then I was getting shit about it from all these other people. And I'm like, the CDJ had no lights on it. Right. I'm not DJing on that. You know what I mean? Like, you think I'm not going to say something or like... Like I couldn't
but
use.
But they'll spend $5,000 on new curtains and couches and new paint.
Right. Same old DJ.
On the bar breaks. It's fixed the next day.
Yeah.
Like DJ. Oh, okay. That's just it.
Keep using the same shit from 12 years ago. Right. And the fader's falling off.
But even like paying attention to stuff, like having the Bozak in there and just having top quality things that work.
Yeah. Right.
You know.
That sounds cool. Do you think that you will continue down that path and try to open other places or be in that world, or just have that be part of your life and still
Going to be part of my life. Right. What I'm doing.
Yeah.
I can't walk away. I found out I can't walk away. Like, I actually tried to
from
quit.
From DJing? Or,
right.
Right.
I actually tried to quit once. It just wasn't going good. I was like, oh.
What led up to that? Like, that feeling of I'm done.
Not getting bookings. I felt like everything was getting real cliquish in town. Mm-hmm. You had to be down with this crew or this promoter.
Right.
I almost felt blacklisted at a point. Like, nobody's booking me.
Right.
You know? And so that was like, I guess I've had a good run.
And so you were just done. And done. What broke I'm you done. Out of that?
Someone called and booked me for something really cool. And I said, okay, I'll do it. And then a bunch of cool shit kept coming and coming and coming, and it hasn't stopped. And I'm still here. That's what did it.
That's crazy. The universe was like, hell no, you're not getting out of this. We're sucking you back in.
I was like, okay.
That's funny. I've had conversations with friends too that are successful DJs, very similar situations. You know, I don't know what to do anymore. I'm like, just like we said, go back to the reason why you do it, and you don't know what's going to come your way. And then now they're back killing it. And that's interesting. And the things that you love from vinyl and things that you were into in the beginning are now coming back around.
Oh, it's crazy.
There's all these spots, you know, in Vegas and everywhere. And even these private events. I do a lot of these movie premieres and private events for these, you know, Hollywood streaming companies and networks. And I'm starting to get asked, oh, do you play vinyl? Okay, you know, like, are you any vinyl DJs? I'm like, yeah, that's
called
a DJ.
I mean, I'm sure you've seen a lot of our homies are running out right now and buying records.
Going back. I have friends that sold them all, and they're going back and rebuying
them. Okay, so let's talk about that. Because when Serato came out, it was a great time for me because everyone was dumping their records.
And you got to buy them.
And I bought them. I never stopped buying records.
Right.
So I buy more now than I was then.
You have like an infinite amount of, you have an uncountable amount of records at this point.
I do.
Like, it would take you too long to count it.
But I used to tell all the homies, nah, don't sell your records. And they're like, why do I need them?
Right.
I remember seeing when he first moved to Vegas and he picked me up at the airport. He had all these records in the back seat. And I looked back and all of them were just warped crazy because he just let them sit in the back seat. He didn't care about them. I think he was going to throw them away.
Right. That's crazy.
I'm like, what are you doing?
And now it's like, that's a big thing, you know?
But the thing was, so being a working DJ, like before Serato, I would have to go out and buy all these hits that I need to play, like J-Lo and all this stuff. Records I didn't necessarily care for or want myself. But I had to have them. I had to play them.
Oh, yeah.
The good thing when Serato came, I didn't have to buy those records anymore.
Right.
I could digitally play it, but I could buy the records I wanted.
Yeah.
So I was spending my money on things I wanted
or that
mean something to me.
And now I feel like there's a new culture developing where people like Nick Bike and some other people are pressing
themselves. Yeah, he has a lathe.
Right.
So he does lathe cuts.
And doing these small boutique labels that are geared towards DJs who make a lot of edits for digital playing that also want to have it on vinyl, you know?
Yeah.
And these short and feeding into the streetwear mentality or the short run mentality and the rarity and only pressing a certain amount and then not having them. So there's just a new resurgence, you know, that's coming out. And I feel like we're at the tip of the iceberg for it in a way. Right.
Right.
I mean, who knows where this is all going to go?
It's kind of like you said, how people call you. Do you know any vinyl DJ? Like, I get so
vinyl
many
DJ. Yeah.
I get so many calls for vinyl gigs lately.
Yeah,
because well, really
you're one
where,
of the go-to people.
I really don't know where that came from, though. Like, why is it so cool all of a sudden?
I know. Well, it's just any trend. You know what I mean? Then there's the people that know why it's cool and why it's coming back for the good reasons. And there's the people on the outside like, oh, we need to be part of that. We don't really know why.
I know. There's a lot of those.
Yeah. I mean, I just read, what was it? I don't know if it was Barnes & Noble. Some big corporate company, like, they're expanding their vinyl sections, you know, in all the places. And, I mean, it's huge.
I mean, I heard that Urban Outfitters is the number one vinyl seller in the U.S.
Wow. I believe that, though. I remember when I started seeing it in there. I'm like, what?
I remember making jokes when Serato came out. I was like, hey, have you been on Turntable Lab lately?
Right.
they got some cool wallets and jeans for sale. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, they're turning into Urban Outfitters, or they're selling
it all
clothes and candles and together.
I know. Yeah, it's interesting. I know. I mean, I don't miss the heaviness carrying when it was all.
What's funny though is like nobody complained. I feel like no one complained at that time. You just did it
because we were younger.
But that too.
I just had to move so many crates in my house, and like I was like, "Whoa, I don't feel good. Like my back hurts."
It's terrible.
And I was like, "Yo,
I lift one crate." And I'm like, "How did I used to do this?" Right. Like, that's probably also why I like 45s.
Yeah.
You can pack way more and travel with them.
No, if I'm going back to vinyl gigs, I'm just going to rebuy a bunch of shit on 45 and, you know, stuff like that. I don't know. But there is the more fun, all those elements we said, and playing these records, you know, without having to look at a screen and being more in touch with the crowd in a way.
Yeah, I used to hate when Serato came out. Everyone was just staring at their computer.
Yeah,
I was like, looks like they're checking their email on stage. Or,
yeah, exactly.
It's goofy.
I know. And you've done a lot of work with brands as well. I know, you know, I've seen your face on some Adidas shoes, and I've seen you do a lot of work with brands over the year. Over the years, I know you have something going on with Echo Clothing right
now. Yeah, right? So for their Hip Hop's 50th anniversary, they did a shirt collab with me.
Dope.
Yeah, it's super dope.
Really cool.
Man, they like recognize me. I'm like, that's cool. Right.
They recognize your contribution to the culture and what you've done. I mean, like I said, you really, you know, Seattle obviously is known for things like a Sir Mix-a-Lot and things like that. But from a lot of, you know, my world and a lot of people, I mean, you really put Seattle on the map with the hip hop scene, you know, the underground hip hop scene in a major way, like we discussed before. So,
yeah, I felt I've had this great, like, steady career.
Yeah.
Like, I've never, not that I ever wanted it, right? We said we do it for the love. I never, like, shot to superstardom or anything like that. I'm real happy with where I'm at and what I've done. You know what I'm saying?
You're working.
It's like you said, I've seen everyone come and go.
Right.
And I'm still here. Like,
do you have any insight into what leads to the longevity of a DJ like that and your long career?
I said earlier, don't quit. And I just think the love, like I actually really care for it. I'm passionate about it still. Yeah. I get just excited now finding a record as I did when I was 15, 16.
Right.
It's the same feeling, the same excitement.
That's true. Have you passed any of that on to your son, or is he into a whole different world?
Nah, he's into videos and editing and content creating.
That's cool.
Yeah, he's going to school for that.
That's dope. Yeah, my son hasn't got the DJ itch really yet or ever. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Not going to push him. He's a little athlete, so I'll let him do that. Mm-hmm. Oh, and you know, something else we need to mention is your radio show. You do a radio show every Sunday.
Yes.
Sunday Soul on KEXP.
Yes.
Up in Seattle, soon to be in the Bay Area.
Yeah, in 2 weeks. Okay. I'm not sure the call letter's out there, but yeah.
So that's incredible. What kind of stuff should people expect from listening to you on there?
I'll play, like you said, a lot of stuff people sampled. Exclusives, probably versions you haven't heard before.
Mm-hmm.
I always say quality hip hop, quality rap, not all rap, but quality. What I feel is quality rap. Things like that.
Right. That's dope. And you post those online. I know you can listen to it on the actual radio station website. Do you put them also on your SoundCloud and stuff?
No, just on the station. Everything's archived for 2 week time period. So there's two shows.
Oh, that's what it was. Cause I saw the last two shows.
There's two shows at a time. They're up for 14 days.
Oh, okay.
So like this Sunday, then that'll knock the last one out and it'll be up.
Got it. Okay. I was wondering, cause I found the two and I was trying to find earlier ones and I'm like, I can't find it.
But it's like I had also told you earlier, it's like, is anybody listening? Does anybody care? And then I get messages from the Netherlands and all these places.
Right.
Oh, wow. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. If you do it for the love, your tribe finds you. You find your tribe, like you said, and you connect with like-minded people.
Right.
And it all.
I feel like everything eventually happens for you if you give it your all, if you don't quit and you do it for the love.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be overnight, but It happens.
It's definitely not overnight. I get people writing me like, I've been doing this for a year. How do I make it? And I'm like, okay, do it for 9 more. Right. And then hit me up.
Well, it's funny. A lot of DJs will come to me and say something kind of sideways or something. And I'm like, talk to me in 30 years.
Right.
Let me see where you're at with this in 30 years. Then come talk to me. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
But no, it's you got to put in the work, and there's no shortcut to that, you know, and there can be people that you see out there, but it's not really the real thing. If that makes sense. Dope. And what about like, let's see, we've just been talking and I had a bunch of questions written, but we haven't even looked at it yet. So let's see what we got. You know what? Actually, a couple things. We had a couple questions from the internet. Thank you, internet. Let's see if you got any answers for these. Jen Rosero, she is an amazing person down here, runs the Bungalow and with Brent Bolthouse and legendary in the club scene here. And she asked, what is your most precious piece of vinyl? Is there even an answer to that within your huge collection?
No, because I think it changes whatever I'm feeling from week to week.
Yeah.
So I can't really say that, right?
Yeah. Do you sell like your vinyl? Like, is that another source of income for you? Like, buying, no, selling.
I don't sell. That's so crazy. You just I don't keep sell. Buying it. I keep buying, but there's certain records that I love so much. I feel like I buy them anytime I see them.
You have like 10 of them,
right? And so then, like, if you stop by and you need it, well, I'll probably just give it to you,
right?
Because
right?
I have 10 of them.
That's incredible. This, but... And where do you store it? Like, do you have a special storage or?
No, I did. I got rid of it. My house is full.
Full.
Yeah. It's embarrassing. I actually had hoarders call me once.
No.
They called me once and they said, hey, we heard about your collection.
What?
And we wanted to come over. And I said, okay. And then they said,
Who ratted you
somebody
out?
Somebody ratted me out. Right. Somebody
someone in your life called them.
Somebody ratted me out. But when they found out they were pristine and in plastic and in perfect order and looked nice and neat, they weren't interested at that
point. They're like, this is a collector, not
right,
a hoarder.
Right. They were like, oh no.
This is just a misunderstood collector. Like right. The people thought he's a right. hoarder. Hoarders, like, they got just shit they don't know and rats inside of it. And that's crazy. I wish you would have done it just to do it. They would have come and be like, we don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Did you ever find out who called them?
I have no idea. No. Shout out to whoever tried to get me on hoarders.
So, yeah. Yo, that's crazy. Oh my God. So, all right, what else? Let's see who else wrote Flip Out. Obviously, you know, another vinyl.
Known him for years.
Yeah, Vancouver.
Long time.
In the house.
Another one that does it for the love. And does it for the love. B-boy.
He, you know, we were speaking. Oh, actually, I wanted to talk about this and we'll get into it a little bit, but we did a little bit, but talking to people on the internet, you know, and getting in arguments with DJ Twitter or DJ conversations, and you brought up something and we were talking about not getting too involved. And I feel like Flip Out is someone that's not afraid to get involved. He even calls
I feel like he likes to get involved.
He calls himself fake mad. Sometimes he seems real mad. We don't know, but we love Flip Out. He's an amazing DJ person, all of it. And he asked a question that I don't know if it was a joke or not, but you say, do you own the drum set that Impeach the President was played on?
Yeah, that's a joke.
I figured. Okay.
No, because people think I own crazy stuff.
Of course.
But, you know what?
Yeah, you own the drumsticks.
Right.
No.
I own the bells from Mardi Gras, from Bob James Monarch, the actual bells.
The actual bells. And you play them to wake up your child in the morning. Ding, ding. Get out of bed. He's like, Dad, enough. I've memorized the pattern. All right, Mighty Moves, another dope DJ, someone who makes incredible edits. And thank you, Mighty Moves, for everything you do. He wants to know about your B-boy days. We got a little taste of it, but any other stories from those days?
No, I just saw it as a young kid in New York when I was out there. And another thing, I'm like, oh, I want to do that.
Right.
So I was trying to teach myself how to do it.
Did you get good at
That's
it?
That's the thing about all this, right? Even DJing, I didn't have nobody to show me anything.
Oh, it was hard back in the day, yeah.
I'm like, Dad, do we have a turntable?
Right.
Yeah, here's one in the closet, right?
Right.
Go downstairs. Do we have another one? oh yeah, there's one. It's a, you have these two mix match things and they're goofy, but I put them together and started DJing, right?
Yeah.
Teaching myself. And what I didn't realize at the time is that I plugged them in wrong on the back of the mixer. So I'm hamster style.
You invented that.
I'm hamster style, but I didn't never knew that until the real DJ came over and was like, why is it broken? And I'm like, what's broken? Nothing's broken. He's like no, this isn't be. Right. And then I learned a lot of DJs did that.
Are you still like hamster Q-Bert style? And, right, Q-Bert, yeah. So you still do hamster style?
Yeah, I can't go the other way. It messed my brain up.
My brain can't do that way.
My brain can't do that.
Damn, so you put it to the right when it's on the left turntable.
Right, and I have a Clubman mixer. I collect mixers. The Clubman is from the 70s. And if you look at it, the numbers are like that on the mixer.
Oh, wow. So I'm like,
maybe I did it the right way.
Yeah.
And everybody else is
maybe
wrong.
Maybe there was a reason.
Well, I asked everybody. I went to Twitter and I was like, why is it like this? Right. What's the reason on this mixer it's like this?
There's no reason.
Someone said, because they used to put both turntables on one side and the mixer to the other side.
Right. That's how Questlove DJs. Right. I've seen his setup. I'm like, how Philly is he style, thinking? Like, so original Philly style, right? So you're just like, put it to the, both turntables are to your
Premier,
right.
Premier does that.
Yeah. But not always,
no,
right?
No, not always.
Premier's just a magician. Yeah, exactly. Premier's a magical human. One day he has to come on this podcast. Premier, what up?
But yeah, we had no teachers. It's kind of like we said.
Oh, yeah, VHS
started,
tapes.
When hip-hop started, it wasn't hip-hop.
Yeah.
When I started going to the stores, they didn't have a rap section.
No.
Look at me like I'm out of my mind.
And there was hardly any people to be friends with that were DJs. It was hard. I'd find one friend and be like, you're my best friend.
Right.
We need to talk
when
about this.
When I started, I feel like there were two DJs in my city.
Yep. I know.
But I also want to talk about record stores back then, how it was kind of like the clubhouse and you'd see your homies. And
yes.
You guys could discuss music and what's hot.
You'd stay there for 4 hours, six hours, 8 hours, get an internship there, you know, or whatever.
I feel
you
like
could
now
do.
What we're doing is our clubhouse. Now we're sitting and talking.
For Twitch
other.
Was it, you know, in a way at the time, but it was like Twitch became the clubhouse during the pandemic. Right. But yeah, it's like that's why we have these podcasts or things
everybody
like that.
Could chime in. And
but you're right. It was the barbershop. You know, it was the spot to go. Oh, have you heard this? Have you seen this? Or, this dude just came in. He's on the tables. Oh, J-Rock, you know, or whoever is here, you know, murdering it. And speaking of record stores, DJ P. Dot wrote in, what's your most memorable digging story, record digging story?
I think it was like a wig shop and a furniture shop in Brooklyn, but they also had records.
Wow. Did you find anything good?
Yeah. Yeah. It's New York.
Of course.
All the records were pressed in New York. And that's like people say, New York's dry and there's nothing there. I'm like, come on. They were all made there. They're here.
Right. Hit the wig shop.
I know that Japanese and Europeans, everyone came and bought everything. There's still records in New York. Don't sleep. Don't get it twisted. I just think they're not looking.
Right.
They might walk by that wig store every day and think there's nothing in there.
Yep.
Or that's just some junk. You go like, nah, there's stuff everywhere. Just remember being an odd thing, right?
Yeah.
Even like there was a spot in Seattle one day, my car broke down. I had to walk. And I walked by an Army Navy surplus store and they had all these like helmets and stuff in the window. And I got about half a block past it and it clicked on my head. I said, wait, did I just see records in there? And I walked back and they bought some store that went out of business years ago and they were just sitting in this Army Navy surplus.
And they don't know what they are.
Yeah. They were like, oh, these guys like they're all a dollar. Okay, cool. Wow. But if my car didn't break down, I wouldn't have known either. I would have drove by that place for years.
Yeah.
I would have never known.
Thank you, car, for breaking down.
Right.
and we didn't get to touch on it as much yet is the sports DJing. I know you DJed for many sports teams in Seattle, including, like we said, the Super Bowl Seahawks, as well as just last December doing the Seattle Kraken hockey. And you said you have another one coming up.
Right.
What's that experience like, especially a DJ like you that came up in the time, like you said, of just crate digging and wanting to play that kind of stuff and then being in such a corporate environment and such a mixed group of people and a huge, you know, arenas and stuff like that?
I feel like those kind of, first of all, they're crazy exciting.
Yeah.
Just the energy in the room. And it's almost kind of like Vegas. Like I said, they're ready to go. They're ready to party. They're ready to get rah-rah. So
yeah,
you can almost get away with anything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're there. They have fun. A lot of production goes into sporting events nowadays.
Yeah.
Like when I was a kid, you go to the basketball game, they play basketball.
Right.
Now you go and there's a light show and there's a DJ. And it's all this production. Yeah. You know, it's crazy. So
it's true.
They're fairly easy. A lot of fun for sure.
So like, what did you play, let's say, at the Kraken game? Like, well, what was your role at that? Were you the in-game DJ? Were you a guest DJ?
I was a guest DJ for the halftime.
Okay. I did that for the Kings last year, too.
I saw that.
It was interesting. I had no idea what to do. You know, it was so much fun.
I didn't either. I'm like, what am I walking into?
I know.
But it was so dope.
Yeah.
That was more showcasing, juggling, scratching,
okay,
all that kind of stuff.
Dope. So you kept it hip-hop.
Right. I kept it hip-hop, but played, you know, some current top 40 hits that they asked me to play. They're like, we want this and this. Okay,
got
you. But it's kind of like you said, we do it in our way, right? We
still
keep it dope and do it our way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'd love to hear
it. It might not necessarily be the song we would want to play, but
yeah,
we're going to play it the way we play it.
Exactly. We find our way to make it unique. I'd love to hear your set or see what you did or something. I'll be tight. We also were talking about like the internet and how DJs fight on the internet nonstop about stupid things, and we try not to get involved, but you've had some recent tweets and posts where people have gotten into heated discussions, and one of them was, I don't know the exact quote, but it was something about a DJ shouldn't be playing at the venue if they show up to the gig and they can't use the gear that's already there.
Right. I'm a firm believer in that.
Right.
Because I think you're getting paid to be there. You're a professional.
Right.
And the club should have, in most cases, they took the liberty to set it up correctly and spend a lot of money on it.
Right.
So there shouldn't be any reason that you can't play on what is provided. Even when I started out, all the clubs had equipment. I didn't bring my own stuff. I brought my needles, headphones, slip mats, and my records.
Yeah, same.
It wasn't because, I can only play on this or I can't play on that, right?
Yeah.
Because I think that's what it is. A lot of people are like, I can only play on this controller.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fine. You have your preferences. We all do. But I've learned, even you, when the first time I used CDJ 3000s and I was texting you.
Yeah.
I said, hey, Spider, I got this gig next week and I'm on this new piece of equipment.
Right.
What can you tell me? You know?
That's true.
But I've learned to play on everything.
Exactly.
I've even put on my rider exactly what I need, and I showed up and they have CDJs and everything, all this different stuff. It's fine. But that's not what I asked for.
I have a situation this weekend that I'm dealing with that we'll see what happens, but I happen to be playing at a large nightclub and a famous rapper is booked to play in the middle of my set, who I've seen this rapper perform last month multiple times, and they wrote me something through my agent that said, you will be playing on whatever setup the rapper's DJ has requested. And I said, well, what is it? We don't know. Okay. The other thing I know is that I watched this person perform a lot last month. Like I said, I was in the same city with him, and he did a bunch of gigs at all these different places, and he did not have a DJ. Right. So I have a gut feeling that I'm the DJ and that they think that a DJ is coming using a setup. That even happened to me once with another DJ, and they show, you know, you have to DJ for this person and their DJ is very specific, and there's this whole setup. I was like, fine, I'll deal with it. And I get there and the guy's like, all right, play my shit. And I was like, where's your DJ? Like, I don't have a DJ. Right. And I was like, why am I using this weird mixer? You know? And they were like, I don't know. And I'm like, well,
no, I've had situations with very well-known artists.
Yeah.
Same thing. They come on for their show, hand me a CD as they're walking on stage and say, like, play 5, 7, and 8 or something.
I hope I even get that. I'm see what happens.
I didn't know I was your DJ.
Right, exactly. So we'll see. They said that he has a DJ, but they're saying I have to use that setup. And I'm thinking, how different of a setup can it be? Like, I'm asking for an S11 and CDJ 3000s or 2000 Nexus, standard. Right? Yeah, industry standard. Industry, so what's standard. This person going to ask for? And how am I going to know what to be ready for? I imagine it's the same thing, but...
It's crazy to me how a lot of artists nowadays move that way. Like, how are you a multi-platinum major label artist and you don't have a show put together? Right. Like, you're just telling some random guy, play this, this, and this as you walk on.
You're putting the trust into,
as you walk on.
Yeah.
Not earlier that day, not the night before.
But at the end of the day, I'm going to be ready to play on anything, and I can play on anything. Right. And if I'm uncomfortable, then I just use the things I know how to use, and I figure it out later. And if not, then
Where I was going with my message. Like, I was basically, it was better yourself.
Yes.
If you can't play on that, learn.
Right. Figure out a way.
That's where I was going with it.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Not like you're whack because you can't play on this. Not
right. That's but that's what it turned into, right?
Right.
What were some of the best responses you remember?
I get tired of reading them, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I just turned it into a whole debate at some point.
Right. Yeah. I think that's the thing, is that people look at everything on the internet. People feel like someone's saying it in a condescending, confrontational way, when sometimes it is just a topic of discussion that could just be a lighthearted, fun discussion.
And that's another thing. I love to have discussion because I like opinions. I want to know what people think.
Right.
Because Danny Diggs said something and I said, well, that's not where I was going. He said, you asked for my opinion. And I said, I did. And thank you. I appreciate your opinion.
Right. I saw him write in like something about like, well, then they shouldn't have been booked, you know, which it's understandable why people would take it from that perspective. But I think you must have said that because it was sparked by a specific thing or something.
I just got, I guess I saw multiple posts over the weekend of controllers sitting on top of really good expensive equipment.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, come on, why you're walking into this place. They've set it up so nice for you. And then this is what you do.
It's a weird time because when we started, there was only one industry standard. Then there became two, three, four. Right. And now it's what do you do? You know what I mean? People DJ on all types of things.
Okay. So let me ask you this, because I've seen this a lot lately.
Yeah.
In pictures. There's three DJs playing and there's three controllers set up. Three different. They might even be the same kind of controller. Why?
Well, easier for changing over, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I don't have the answer, but I would think.
Two USB outputs on the back? I don't know. I don't really use them.
Well,
I'm just always curious.
Because they're DJing for $100 and they have to go do 10 gigs in one night. They're like, I got to run to the next, bro. You're on.
That's just confusing to me.
Yeah.
But I see that a lot.
Who knows? I mean, we're in a new, I guess, from a positive perspective, in the way that we used to just make things work, through the hip hop MacGyver mindset. Mm-hmm. These kids are just making it work. Hey, I'm going to bring my thing. I'm going to put it on top of the thing. We'll have three controllers, maybe it seems ridiculous to us and maybe it's working for them. I don't know.
Well, I don't know if Siddhar Bahar, but he was saying a lot of the younger DJs laugh at him because he only plays vinyl. And he said he laughs at them because they don't.
Right. But watch how things are turning around. I mean, like I said, I do a ton of these Netflix parties and stuff, and I just watch them fly someone like from London that plays vinyl, and it's like, oh my God. And being asked, like we said, are you a vinyl DJ? I'm like, yeah, I'm a DJ. I mean, that was my life. I got tens of thousands of records. Yeah,
so that too. So I'll see people I know that I've known forever on Facebook, and they'll post, does anybody know a DJ?
Oh my God.
And I'm like, you know a DJ. And then, right. I'll hit them up. Hey, what's up? And they'll say, oh, it's a wedding. I'm like, okay. And they're like, oh, you do weddings?
Right.
I DJ. I'm a DJ. DJ. Anything. What's the event?
Exactly.
But there's oh, we were going to hit you, but we thought you just did nightclubs.
Yeah. No, I know.
I DJ.
It is funny, as a DJ, people just need, it's the music business, it's genres, people that they need to have you categorized.
I know.
Otherwise, they can't handle it. There's something about it. Like, it's with music too, but what kind of music is it? What kind of DJ are you? I'm like, I literally can be any kind of DJ, and I love it, and I'm constantly learning. And this year alone, I've done musical genre gigs or gigs for certain types of events or people that I've never done before, and I'm in my late 20th, probably 28th year, 30th year DJing, and we're doing that.
Yeah,
so
people will say, well, what kind of music do you play? And I say good and bad.
Yeah.
Both of them.
I figure out how to make both bad music rock sound and good. Roll,
country and Western. Good, exactly. And good and bad. Because there's you like it or you don't.
Yeah.
There's two kinds to me, good and bad.
That's true. Yeah, I figure out how to make people that like bad music
I actually play like both, good though. Music. Good and bad. I play them both.
And I put it together. It becomes neutral music. Background. Yeah, that's that's interesting. I mean, getting older, there is levels to this. There is those ups and downs. There is those, should I still be doing this? I didn't think I'd be doing this. And they keep rebirthing yourself in certain ways. But that's the beauty of DJing. And that's a conversation I was having with someone, I think, you know, another dad on my son's soccer team. Like, he goes, how long will you be DJing? And I go, what do you mean? He's like, will you be DJing when you're 60 or 70? And I'm like, if you would have asked me when I was 20, if I'd be DJing when I'm 40, right. I would have been like, 40 so old. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. And I said, also, the first DJ is still DJing. So he's not done. You know what I mean? There, it's not a,
I mean, I have,
there's no
I've
blueprint.
I've had that question for a while. From people, even I question myself sometimes.
Right? Me too, and I don't have a full answer.
But I'm going
to
tell you, there was a Vibe magazine, and it had like all these DJs I look up to, and it had like little articles on it. And it told all their ages.
Yeah,
and I was like, holy crap, these dudes are all 20 years older than me. I thought we were around the same age.
Yeah,
I'm like, wait, I'm actually the young bucket in this. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And that's what gave me. Like the confidence, like, oh, I could really do this until I don't. Right. It's up to me. You don't have to ever quit. Look at David Rodigan, one of my favorite DJs in the world, killing it.
Big up.
Yep.
Yeah, incredible. And such a unique force, you know, in talent and what he brings to the table and so dope. And there is no age limit. And like, yeah, it's the thing. I mean, you're looking at Grandmaster Flash and Kool Herc and these people that started it. So if they're still going, why should there be an end?
Right.
You know, and why should there? I mean, Mick Jagger, there's people that are still doing it. You know, singers of bands are touring around. So there's no rules to it.
No rules.
You can constantly change and evolve. And in the same way, we made DJing out of nothing and we had no friends and no one to learn from. And we just sort of like created this tiny thing and kept building it up, you know, in the same way your record collection grew, your career did. That's just where it's going and we're still building it, you know. We don't there's no end of the bridge, you know, you just keep pushing it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. That's dope. I mean, it's kind of a good thing to end on right there.
I mean, sometimes I'm in the club though. I'm like, I'm a little too old to be in this club.
I feel and you that's, on that.
Right?
Yes.
That's
yes.
For real. That's like serious. You know what it is too? I see a lot of my homies' kids in there. I'm like, I don't want to be around their kids.
I know, but then at the same time, like I just did these parties last weekend. I did Orange County. I did Vegas and it was 18 and over party and it's called Electric Feels and it's indie dance, indie rock, you know, young kids. And I felt like I was like meant to be there. Like I knew all the music. I knew how to manipulate it in this cool new way. I knew it was some of their first experiences being in a place and I was happy to give them that experience. And maybe
there would be an amazing feeling.
Yeah. Like, that's amazing. Know, and I think that it was, there's times where I do feel like, oh God, I don't know what's happening. I'm too old. I don't know these songs. But then there's also that where I feel like it could be that thing that you're saying where someone could be out there going, what is he doing? I want to do that. I could have inspired someone on
and
that.
There is.
I could have taught them about this music that they're just getting into loving and played a few things that they get to go, they Shazammed and they get to go look up and they'll learn. And I got to show them how to take these songs they're listening to on Spotify playlists and put it in a crazy cohesive way and remix it and scratch and do different things, you know, and how it can bring us all together. And it doesn't matter how old anybody is.
I don't think we never realize or know how inspiring we can be.
Because we get jaded on just kind of, I've been here, done that, and all that. And we forget those feelings that we had as the kid and watching and going, it's the first time I saw that. It's giving me goosebumps, giving me those crazy feelings, you know. And we're sort of providing that and here to keep that going for people, you know, and then hopefully they can listen to like a podcast like this and hear us break it down and more in depth form of it or something.
Don't quit.
Don't quit. And I always say this on a lot of the shows because it always keeps coming up, is like, show up, you know, in the same way you said you got called to go because someone got sick. Be ready.
I showed up today, as a matter of fact.
You did show up today. You flew here.
Waited for you for an hour.
Hey, don't tell anybody that. I'm sorry. It wasn't an hour. It was like 42 minutes. I'm sorry. Okay. I apologize to you and the DJ community. You did show up today and I showed up late.
But we both showed up.
We both showed up and we're both here. And we're both here to talk about DJing and push the culture forward, hopefully inspire some people with this and, keep connecting with each other and figure out ways to build and you know Definitely. What I mean? All that, you know, this yeah. is it's infinite. The amount of things that we can do with this and the amount it that is. It's going to keep growing.
It is.
And I'm going to go to Vegas this weekend. I'm going to see Mac Agency DJs.
Like I would have never known I would go around the world or even meet some of the people I met.
Totally.
From right? DJing.
Right.
All of it. Never told me that when I was younger.
Bring my family on vacation.
Right.
And like things that people would pay a ton of money to go on vacation for a week to a place.
I've had.
And I get to bring them and get paid to go do it and do the thing I love that I did in my room for no reason way before I even thought about having a kid. And then I'm here with them, you know? So that is incredible, you know? And I'm so, so, so thankful for that. And it all comes from the love of it and doing it for the love.
Right. I think it comes back around. It comes back to you.
Yeah. And the curiosity and staying curious and staying motivated and doing the work to remain motivated and remain in your career. You know, because we always have these failure moments or feelings of inadequacy or wanting to quit and then coming back, you know, or someone pulling a fire alarm, people chant refund to your face and then you get booked in Seattle
again. We need those moments though. That's they're like learning experiences. Yeah, but
bombing and your first gig with the records and realizing people want to dance, you know, you have to go through the scary, uncomfortable moments to get to the point of being comfortable and being confident.
And remembered.
And remembered. Yeah, that's true. With those curveballs. Yep. Yep. All you Seattle DJs figuring out ways to be remembered nonstop. Yo, well, before we get out of here, I want to thank Supreme LaRock coming on the show, down here. I don't know if you decided to come down here and then book the gig or you already have the gig, but I'm glad this worked out.
No, I was like, I'm going to be in town. So
it's perfect.
The homie's like, come play.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming here. And, you know, he's online. He's active on, you know, it took a minute to get him on MySpace. And from there, sky's the limit.
I didn't want anything to do with this kind of stuff.
And now look at him. And he's starting DJ fights.
The gaff got me on Instagram.
Okay. The gaff's the best. Yeah. Well, what's up with these Canadian dudes being the happiest people on the planet
Earth? They are. All of them.
He's like, the gaff has never not been smiling. Scratch Bastard makes you happy by looking at him.
Magic tea he drinks every morning.
Is it mushrooms in it? What's going on? No, the gaff makes Scratch Bastard and the gaff make me happy by watching them do any activity I feel like in their life. You know what I mean? Whether it's hanging out their children, looking through records,
anything.
DJing, yoga, making coffee.
Whatever they're doing.
Yeah, like they're just talking. I'm just like, these guys are great, man. Putting me in a good mood. That's incredible. But yeah, like you got on, but now he's Supreme LaRock on all channels. Yes, you can find him there.
The board.
You want to go argue with him on X, aka Twitter. You want to go peep his amazing Instagram posts or anywhere else. You will see all that and come by his club, buy his t-shirt and support the man. As you have been and as you will be. So yeah, thank you for coming on the DJ
Much
Spider.
Appreciated.
Yeah, of course, man. It's the DJ Spider podcast presented by BeatSource. So thank you to BeatSource for letting us do this. And yeah, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. I will see you next time or
somewhere in an airport.
In an airport discussing new gear on the internet somewhere, the new social media site. We'll be there. So Supreme LaRock, thank you. See you soon.
Thank you.
Peace.
And that was the DJ Spider podcast.